We're talking with Joe McMonagle about remote viewing. And as Joe has said, he thinks that everyone has some psychic abilities, but can anyone be trained to be a remote viewer? There are protocols that can be learned, although I suspect that's a pretty steep learning curve. We'll get into that and then open up the phone lines with your questions for my guest right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, one of the things that you wrote in Mind Track, one of your early books, at the back of the book, you said one of the things you were working on was life in the year 3000. Do you happen to remember remote viewing life in the year 3000 and what you may have seen?
Yeah, what I saw is kind of interesting because there is nowhere near the population we have now. It's probably something like 1/30th of the population. And a lot of people have implied that we must be going to have a huge war or lose millions of people to some disease or something. And that's kind of a narrow way of looking at it. It may be that we will discover how to jump from star to star and find other planets that we might be able to occupy, and that may be one reason why the population's very reduced by then. But the population will be reduced. Most of the buildings will be basically underground. We'll build from the top down. It doesn't mean that we'll be hiding in some way. It just means that it's more more economical and cost-saving to be living in an upside-down skyscraper, one that's a constant 56 degrees versus running from one extreme to the other on the surface. And that we'll need the surface territory or the above-ground area for more enjoyable pleasures, like walking and in the parks and things that will exist in the cities, that kind of thing.
I remember in a description of your experience, the remote viewing of Mars, that I think you said that you encountered a being there who saw you, and that that whoever this being was that saw you, they kind of thought it was an optical illusion or something. Have you had that experience in other remote viewing assignments, for example, in the future, going into the future?
I had only one other time when that occurred, and it was a practice target back in the very beginning of the project. And the practice target was the small stone chapel on the hill at Arlington, where the graves of the veterans and soldiers exist. And the specific target time and date was midnight of the night prior to the service for the burial of President Kennedy. And his body was, in fact, interred within the stone chapel, and the chapel was sealed overnight. And that's the specific targeting date and time. And in the course of doing that, I had an impression that there was someone sitting on the right-hand side of the, I think it was the second or third pew inside the chapel to the right. And the person was somewhat up next to a supporting column of some kind. And I sketched that person and I remember putting a white hat on them and being very specific about the fact they were wearing a white hat. And thought it was kind of interesting because the chapel was sealed and there were guards on the doors, the exterior doors, so no one could have been inside the chapel after midnight that day. And some time went by, and in the course of going through some of the files, we found that Inga Swann, who was a very famous psychic who recently died, who was working at SRI at the time, it also had this specific target as a randomly chosen target for an experiment or something of some kind, and that he had targeted the precisely same date and time, and he had drawn an individual inside the same chapel, but on the other side of the room, and that person was sitting next to the column in the third or fourth row or pew on the left-hand side, and that person was wearing a dark hat. And there's been conjecture that he and I were basically seeing one another since we were doing the viewing of the same time and date of the same target. And I don't know if that's true or not, of course. There's no way of knowing. But I find that to be really interesting.
Yeah. I asked you before about danger and in the context of you're out there and you can't get back. What about physical danger to you? I mean, it must take a toll on your body. You've had a couple of heart attacks here.
The major problems I had were predominantly stress. I was doing at one point from about the third month of 1982 until my retirement in September of 1984. I was the only surviving viewer in the group out of the original six. They were in the processes of trying to replace the viewers, and they had not had an opportunity to do that. So for a period of almost 2 years, I was the only viewer in the unit, and I was doing all the viewing that four viewers used to do, four or five viewers. So the enormous amount of stress in that situation was very disagreeable, very difficult. And that was the period of time that the Army felt I should go down to the Monroe Institute and meet Bob Monroe in the hopes that he could help reduce that stress for me through the use of some of his sound techniques and his some of his tapes that he was creating at the time. And it turns out that we were successful in reducing the stress as well as some other things.
You know, I've heard from, I want to talk about the Monroe Institute a little bit. I've heard from Hal Putoff and some of your colleagues that that pretty much everyone has some remote viewing abilities and psychic abilities. Is that true with the people who come to the Monroe Institute to be trained in it? Describe the training period and how I would imagine that's a pretty steep learning curve to be good at it. It took you a long time, but I suspect that at least some people who show up, you got to tell them, go home. You don't have it.
Well, George, the truth of the matter is, and I'm going to give you the scientific answer because we've tested this in the lab for many, many years, almost 4 decades now. And the fact of the matter is, every human being walking the planet has the capacity to do remote viewing. And now, having said that, if you want to start talking about the quality of the viewing, that's a whole different matter. The probability that someone is a world-class viewer is going to be somewhat in the neighborhood of 1 out of perhaps 200 or 1 out of 400 individuals randomly chosen off the street. So, in one sense, it's not a lot of world-class remote viewers out there. The other difficulty is, while training will help somewhat in helping an individual structure what they do, it generally has absolutely no effect on the quality of the viewing or the improvement in the viewing. What it will do is it will aid or assist the individual in their consistency. Now, having said that, people need to understand that if we in the lab or in the application of remote viewing, if we find an individual who is consistently good at, let's say, just determining colors, for instance, that doesn't sound like a lot, but we can design targets around the use of colors, and that person will be capable of getting us some tremendous answers to problems that we would otherwise have no access to. So quality of viewing and how it's used, the kinds of targets it's applied against, has a great deal to do with how good something might be or not be.
You teach it, though. You're the teacher.
Yes. I never taught remote viewing until this past year. And Skip Atwater, who was my boss in the unit, he was the operations officer. He retired from his job running the lab at the Monroe Institute. And when he retired, they asked if I would come in and take up the teaching that he had been doing for some years in the remote viewing. And I agreed to do that, but only with the capacity or the ability to change that training any way I saw fit. And so I've done three training programs so far, and I'm I'm pleased to say that at least 80% of the people who were in my last training program, which were 25 people, at least 80% of them have written in their evaluations that they had the experience of remote viewing and know that they can do remote viewing.
Wow. Well, that's pretty encouraging. So how often do you have a class or a course?
Right now I'm having three classes a year. If it proves that we're capable of filling more than that, then we will probably increase the number of classes. I'm currently designing a second class, which is more of an advanced class, which will address other things besides viewing, such as dowsing and some things that go along with remote viewing. Psychometry as an example, which is the ability to touch something and know something about it, those kinds of things. But that's in progress right now. The basic remote viewing course is a 6-day program. It's one of 16 different programs they have at the Institute, and all 16 programs are 6-day programs.
Well, we have links on our website. Hope people will check it out if they're interested. We're going to go to the phone lines now. East of the Rockies, Don in New York. What's on your mind, Don?
Hello, gentlemen. George and Joe, thanks for taking my call. I actually have a two-part question. I'll present and take my answers off the air. Part one, I'm Native American descent, and I want to enter the remote viewing class structure, and I'm just wondering if ethnicity provides any type of advantage for remote viewing. And question number two, how does Joe feel about the history and the personage of Jesus? Thanks for taking my call. I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay, Don.
In answer to your first question, we've not found any, I will reverse it a little bit, and I'll say that we've not found any disadvantage to any ethnicity or any specific background of any individuals, that everybody has pretty much the same capability. But having said that, I will say that the Native American or the First Nation people are capable of doing some things that many others aren't, simply from the viewpoint that their beliefs or their constructs in reality are more accepting of some of the issues and some of the things that could be considered barriers to other people with other belief structures. In answer to your second question, in terms of the personality or the individual called Jesus, I believe that Jesus was very much the Son of God, as all of us are the creations of God, or a grand engineer, as I refer to God, in that he was a great teacher, and he brought the same message that many great teachers have come before and have come since and share with him. These same messages deal with how we should view our responsibilities as human beings, and to not pursue what our responsibilities are is a great failure in that regard. So I think, as everyone believes, that there have been many great teachers, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, many who have come in the past and have pretty much said the same message, which is our responsibility to try to understand and follow.
Thanks, Don. West of the Rockies, Julie in Bellevue, Washington. Good morning.
Hi, I have a question. I'm a massage therapist, and I have a new modality called Yuffage, but the principle of it is you put your hands on somebody, and literally you think stillness, and that brings a normalcy to the body. But the fight I will have with massage therapists and physical therapists is the fact that they will say they need a science behind this. They need to prove that this is real, even though it can happen on, you know, over and over, they still need to have a double-blind study. But in that double-blind study, the entire time they will be doubting, or they will have intentions that aren't the same intention you're supposed to have when you're doing this.
So your question is?
My question is, as I'm starting to teach this to students, how do I help them to understand that?
How do you address that doubt or that lack of belief without the scientific issue being addressed, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Because literally they can't do this work unless they're putting their hands calmly on somebody and just think stillness, you know, relaxation, calmness. Literally, that's what you do.
Yeah, one of the things, you know, there's a direct correlation to remote viewing here in that one of the things we have come to understand in the science of it, in the actual exploration and experimentation in remote viewing, is that a clearly shared common intention between all of the participants in a remote viewing experiment will almost guarantee its success, or the lack thereof will almost guarantee its failure. So common shared intention is not unusual in life. If you go to any business, for instance, let's take a company that makes shoes. If the people making shoes are going to put out a new shoe product, and they want their salesmen to go out and sell lots of these shoes and make lots of money, they don't just simply say, "There's new shoes and here they are, go out and sell them." They bring their sales individuals into the company, they get them into the conference room, and they have an entire presentation where they try to all come from the same place. They put them all on the same page, basically, so that everyone has a common or shared interest or intention in what it is they're selling and why. And that usually guarantees the success of the sales product, the product sales. So it's the same thing with anything we do in life. If you have a common shared intention, and it's a good one, and everybody's on the same sheet of music, there is obvious benefit to that. And it's seen in the outcome, or it's seen in the results. So you don't need science to tell you that that's something that's absolutely necessary in any endeavor, especially one where you have human-to-human interaction. So to not accept that would be ignorance to the fifth degree, I think. I don't know if that answers your question. But,
it definitely does.
Well, thank you, Julie. Thanks for the call. Our phone lines are pretty much full, Joe, so you've seemed to have struck a chord with the audience here. When we come back, we'll go to the phone lines and get to as many of our listeners' questions as we can get to. I want to, do you have any other new books coming out? You're working on a book?
I'm actually working on three of them simultaneously.
Three books.
I'm working on one, which is called Himiko. It's on the life and history. It's sort of a fictional drama of reality based on a lot of remote viewing that I've done on the only female empress of Japan, who lived around 250 AD and ruled Japan for 70 years.
Oh, didn't I read that you used remote viewing to find her palace or something?
Right, her summer palace, her winter palace, her temple facility, her burial site, burial chamber. We think we even found that, and we've asked for permission to open it in order to prove what's in it. But that was a six-year project that I did with a number of people in Japan, and we amazed even, I think, the court of the emperor. When we found the burial site, because it was obviously a burial site of someone who was very noble or part
of it. That's an amazing accomplishment. We're talking with Joe McMonigal, remote viewer, and we'll come back and get to as many of your calls as we can in our final segment. Stay with us, everyone. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. Our phone lines are full. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight has been Joe McMonagle, maybe the best remote viewer ever. We have links on our website, the Coast to Coast website, if you want to learn more about what he's up to and the work at the Monroe Institute. We go back to the phone lines. First-time caller, Ellen in New Hampshire. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Actually, you kind of touched on it. For the future, Joe, have you done any recent projections for the United States in the next coming years? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
With regard to the United States specifically, I've been asked that a number of times by numerous individuals, and I think that a lot of that comes out of a past fear that's been generated by the wars we've just quit and a number of other issues. But I think the greatest issue we're facing in terms of our ability to deal with an almost insurmountable problem has to do with climate. We're so far behind the climate curve now that if we did everything we possibly could, we're still going to be having tremendous difficulty in terms of protecting our growing seasons and our ability to produce sufficient food for the United States, as well as produce the kinds of energy that will be necessary to supplant or replace the ones that deal specifically with nothing.
A lot of people don't want to hear that, Joe. They don't want to hear
I understand that, but it is a serious problem. And by not addressing it, burying our head in the sand, we're not doing anything at all to fix it. And I'm not even sure it's fixable now. It's something we're going to have to now suffer through, and the longer we put off addressing it, the suffering will become much more extended, much more difficult.
Well, maybe that has
eventually transcend all other issues.
Maybe that has something to do with why in the future we're living underground and there's 1/30th the population, but you know, that's just a guess.
That you may be right, George. I don't know. I just know that it's become a significant issue, and one that we can ill afford to ignore it any longer. We have to address it.
Kevin on the wild card line in St. Paul, Minnesota. Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, hey, guys. Thank you. My question's a little off topic, maybe, but I thought Joe might have some interesting insights in it. As someone who really mistrusts our government quite a bit and has for many, many decades now, really, I'm wondering what your impressions are of the direction that our government seems to be taking our country with the whole NSA thing, and what your feelings are about somebody like Edward Snowden, who's obviously did something to release information. I guess generally, what's your feeling about our direction and the degree of secrecy that we seem to be having in our country at this point?
That's a really good question, and I'm glad you've asked it. I need, for the sake of truth and being completely transparent, everyone needs to understand that the primary people I work for, perhaps, in my entire period of time as both a remote viewer and an intelligence, was not only NSA, but the CIA as well. And having said that, I will say that I think that Snowden, I understand his reasons for what he did, and I understand why he did it, and I think that he should have brought it to the attention and screamed very loudly about his concerns to someone. But I think the way the actual way he did it, I think, could have been done in a different way, so that he would not have done the kind of damage that he did to our security. But having said that, I think that he should be dealt with more as an errant whistleblower than a traitor. I think his intention was to bring to the forefront the issues that he's exposed. I think the kinds of surveillance that NSA is doing, I think, is a direct violation of the Constitution, as I understand it. there may be very good reasons for it, but that doesn't mean it's a legal thing to do, and it doesn't mean that it's something they should be doing. There are many other ways of addressing the problem. It would take more time. It would require more control. It would require them capitulating to oversight of some kind. But all of those things are expected within any agency in America that has to deal with the privacy of Americans. I think that's a sacrosanct area that has to be protected as much as anything else in our Constitution. And I'm greatly disturbed by the fact that there seems to be people that are willing to ignore those things for the sake of protection or comfort in that protection. I said this after 9/11. I would rather see more direct attacks and our response to those attacks being more viable than giving up the freedoms and the things, the protections that we have guaranteed by the Constitution.
So, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin, for that call and for the answer too, Joe. That's I guess a lot of people are pretty mad at Snowden for his revelations, but it seems to me that
I can understand it, George. Yeah. I mean, he in the eyes of many people is a traitor, and he has to accept responsibility for that. But I think he could have done this within the venues that exist here in America. He could have stood up in front of the American people and done what I would have done or anyone else, which is take full responsibility and suffer the consequences. If it's that important, then you have to be willing to do that. And in fact, that lends credibility to the action. But the way he did it, I think, put a lot of people at great risk. It gave away some methodologies that should not have been given away and has made us greatly more vulnerable to our enemies than we were prior.
Charles in Los Angeles, what's on your mind, Charles?
This is a great idea, I think. If you could maybe have Joe tell you how that he would like an assignment, and maybe you'd do more than one to try to ultimately and bring back the information to us later to find out what has been going on in the state and national parks all this time, and you know what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah.
And number two, does he know yet, or could he do some research on it if he hasn't, why they're poisoning us with these chemtrails? And I'll say good night, and thank you very much. I love the program.
Joe, I don't know if you're familiar with this issue. There's a guy, a guest of ours that we've had several times named Dave Politis, who's written a series of books about people who keep disappearing from national parks under really strange mm-hmm. circumstances, like they're just snatched out of the sky. Ever come across something like that?
I haven't.
Psychic travels?
This is okay. New to me, and I've not, unfortunately, been targeted on chemtrails. No one has said that interest to target me in that way, but I am familiar with disappearances in national parks. I live adjacent to one of the most beautiful national parks in the Shenandoah Mountains, and we've had numerous people that have just vanished in the area of that park, or while acting as tourists or strolling through that park, and they just sort of disappeared. No one's seen them since, and there's no explanation for it. Again, I've not been targeted on that, but that seems to be disturbing to me. There could be a mundane reason why, and there could be an exotic reason why, but that would be an interesting target to get.
Yeah, it might be. The circumstances are pretty weird. I mean, in some of them, and they disappear, some of them end up being dropped back, almost like they're dropped from the sky in locations that have been searched previously. We'll have to send you some material on it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to address. I would like to see something on that.
All right. Claudia in Joshua Tree, California. What's on your mind, Claudia?
That's like Beretta said, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Talking about Snowden. Yes.
Right.
Joe, how do you tell the difference if you your random viewing or random imagining? Because I have always figured the things that I see occasionally are my imagination, and I thought I had a very interesting one, but it never has anything to do with me at all.
The way you just said that is absolutely true. It's terribly difficult to tell the difference when you're sitting across from someone who is remote viewing or acting as a psychic. It's extremely difficult to know when they're actually talking about the target or they're talking about their imagination. One of the ways we try to deal with that is we try to guarantee that the person has absolutely no idea what it is they're working on. This in essence forces them to talk about what the primary perceptions are that pop into their mind that we key with a sealed envelope that has the target question within it or the.
What if it's not a question? Just recently, I always seem to zoom in from above. Sometimes it's automatic. Sometimes I can pull myself in to see clearer. In a city street, I focused in on two young women in white blouses. They were talking, looking in a department store window. There were other people on the street, but that has. I live in a Joshua Tree. That we're population 2,000. Mm-hmm. I never get to the city. And other things, horses.
You see the difference. The difference is that I can close my eyes and find myself almost anywhere, looking at almost anything. The difference with the remote viewing is that when you are specifically remote viewing, you're remote viewing on a target that's been presented to you, where there is a specific question or a specific street that's been identified or building or a specific reason or cause why you may be looking at something. So in effect, what carries the person to the object of interest or the person of interest or the location of interest is the question or the direction that's given within the sealed envelope that no one sees. So there's an assumption that the person's going to be responding to the intentional target that's been delivered to them versus just responding on whatever they happen to land on. And that at least gives you some definition as to what you're looking at versus what you're imagining.
Thank you, Claudia. Appreciate it. John in Northern Indiana. Good morning, John.
Good morning, George. What a great show you have tonight. It's a very interesting topic. My question for Joe is, do you believe in the Akashic Records? And if so, have you ever accessed them? And what did you gain by doing so?
I hear a lot of references to the Akashic Record or to the sort of cloud and the library cloud or just different references for where information may be stored that is relevant to all of humanity, that kind of idea. And that may very well exist, and it may be true that there is an Akashic Record and that's where all information comes from. But in my experiences as a remote viewer doing remote viewing, I really have no idea where the information comes from. I would rather not pin myself down to the concept of an Akashic Record, because then I am limiting the availability of information and to a certain extent. I'm limiting it to the belief in the Akashic Record or the understanding that it has to come out of an Akashic Record, when it may be coming out of someone else's mind, or it may be coming out of some other place of origin. So rather than trying to name the source of the information, I would rather keep my mind completely open to any possibility. It's just the way I work. So,
it's a good point from John, but it just could be a matter of the name for it. Akashic Record, cosmic intelligence.
Exactly.
Akashic
Record to one person could be something else to someone else, and that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I just don't want to name my source.
east of the Rockies, Pepper in Oklahoma. Good morning, Pepper.
Yeah, good morning. Joe, I have two questions for you. Number one, I have relatively severe tinnitus, ringing of the ears. Is that going to discount my ability to learn remote viewing or make it very difficult?
No, it won't. It will in the sense that it may be difficult for you to meditate, or maybe difficult for you to focus on what you need to focus on in order to control your perceptions. But I'll give you an example. In latter part of 1967, early 68, I was blown out of a helicopter and fell 100 feet landing sitting up and crushed my spine from neck to bottom. And in the course of the deterioration of my spine over many, many years, I have had 9 surgeries, and I have steel pins and screws and wires all through my spine. And I suffer severe pain all the time, and it never goes away. And that should interfere with anything I try to do. And what I've developed is I've developed a method where I actually use the pain itself as a focusing tool. And it works so well for me now that when I have minimal relief from, say, an injection from a surgeon, or they put me under for one reason or another, I find it extremely difficult to do my viewing because I have lost my ability to focus because the pain is gone. So, you know, I would suggest to you that the tinnitus that you're suffering could be used as a tool to give you a starting place or point from which you can do your focused meditation and use it if possible to center yourself and to limit yourself in what you think about when you try to meditate.
Pepper, I'm sorry, we're about out of time. So appreciate
my other
your call
question,
there.
Please.
No, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you to all the callers. Joe, one other quick question as we're on our way out here. Do you still have these unplanned out-of-body experiences, or you got them under control?
I still have a spontaneous out-of-body on occasion. I try to control them. When they happen spontaneously, I obviously use them for something that's important. I try to assume control of it and go somewhere where I can do something with it. But I still have them spontaneously. Can I add one thing, George?
Sure.
If people are interested in attending one of the Institute programs, they can go to monroeinstitute.com. And I will also be attending a course in Las Vegas in June. It's appliedprecog.com if you're interested in finding out what that's about.
Yeah, you're going to be here in June. I'm going to have to come and check that out. Is it expensive?
You know, I don't even know what it costs. I'm going to be giving a 1-day intro to what's called ARV, associative remote viewing, which is used for betting or for determining a yes or no answer about something.
Huh.
And so if you're interested, go to appliedprecog.com and it'll say something about it. I also have a very dear friend who has a almost 2,000-volume library of paranormal books he's looking for a home for, and he can be contacted at Cybrary, that's Cybrary, at gmail.com, if anybody
All right.
has an interest in assuming that responsibility.
I'll tell you what, you can send me the link on that, and I'll see that it gets out to anybody who wants the information. Joe McMonagle, thanks for joining us. It's been a fascinating discussion. I hope to see you in June when you're in town.
Hey, thank you, George. It's been really good being on your show. I've had a good time.
We'll do it again. Thank you very much. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Bill Sardi, to my friends and colleagues there at Premier, Nathan and Gina and Webmaster Lex and Dan Galanti. And I'll be back next Saturday and Sunday. Hope you can tune in then. Good night, everyone.